Hey everybody, that is Gary Smith.
Hello.
That is Kaz Kenny.
Kapow!
And I am Eddie Bramble, and this is episode 70 of the Blackwater's Edge podcast. Episode 70. We're getting there, man.
Wow, that's a lot of podcasts, man.
Yeah, we're getting there.
Caught past me.
So Kaz, why don't you start us off with this week's fishing report?
All right, folks, just so you all know, I'm at home today. I haven't been feeling good the last few days, so I'm working from home. Dylan's calling in, so bear with us. If we have any glitches, just know we're doing our best. All right, so as far as the fishing report goes today, this fishing report is brought to you by Angler Sports Center in Annapolis. If you need to buy fishing tackle, if you need guns, if you need bullets for your guns, if you need apparel, you need boots, you need socks, you need underwear, you need anything, you need beer, you need soda, you need fishing line, fishing hooks, snakehead tackle, all that good stuff. Just remember, Angler Sports Center is right there on Route 50 on your way down here to the Eastern Shore. An easy on and easy off to get what you need and get back on the road. And just know that all the bait boy stuff is there. Snakehead destroyers, lots of good soft crabs right now. And they got their white perch open that I think just finished up. It's coming up, so pay attention for that. They do a lot of live videos. You can watch the guys, you know, during the day and see what they're talking about, where the fishing's at, what's biting, where, that kind of stuff. So we also want to recognize Angler as our main sponsor for our tournament trail that we have here on the Eastern Shore in Dorchester County. It was really great for them to step up to the plate and take the reins and let us know where they stood for Snakehead. So this week's fishing report, it's been hot. And, you know, I'll let Gary talk a little bit too. But, you know, you got to remember, you know, when we have these hot days like this today and it's scorching like this, I mean, there were places today the water was 105 and 109 degrees, you know, and I'm sure there's places where it's shallower and it was probably hotter than that. So you got to keep in mind there's maybe tough conditions at hand. So you got to try to make the necessary adjustments. And really, a lot of times you got to say a Hail Mary and hope it comes together, because this is just really, really a tough time of the year when it's this hot. To get it done, you know. And Gary, why don't you talk a little bit about what you've been doing here this past weekend? We've had a couple guys out and we've done some fishing, things like that. What are you seeing out there, bud?
Oh, it's hot, buddy. And it's affecting everything. And a boat wouldn't even come up on plane today. The water's so hot it just doesn't even want to do right. It's amazing. I took Grant Elliott and Anastasia out today, and Anastasia caught beautiful bass, man, like 5.5-6 pound bass. Grant called
one.
Swim bait, a frog swim bait. And Grant caught one snakehead, and that's saying he caught his on the same thing, and that was pretty much it. Yeah, you know, it was so miserable you really didn't even want to sit anywhere very long, you know, and try to fish. We got in a little place with some shade and kind of hung out there.
I had to tell you guys earlier. You know, you guys going out there today, I can't believe you guys even went out there. I mean, that says something about how hardcore, you know, snakehead anglers are and what they'll go through to try to make it happen. When you were out there today, Gary, did you see fry balls today, or was it just stagnant?
No, just water was boiling in a few spots, but that was just from the heat. No, actually, so we did see a couple fry balls. That was all, but parents weren't with them. They were up in real shallow water, laying under little grass and weeds and stuff. And parents were somewhere around, but they weren't up there with them.
Well, so that at least lets us know there's still some fish out there to be had. We just need the water to cool down a little bit. We need some rain. I think that's really what we need. We need a good dose of rain. We need to get this water kind of rolling down, get some oxygen back in there, and I think if we see that, then we'll see this thing pick up.
I was telling Grant, you know, one thing we haven't had this year, the water has not been over the bank one time this year, not since all spring, all summer. You know, last year we had tides up in the fields and stuff, and this year, not so.
You know, I think what we really need, I hate to say it, is a tropical storm. I think if we had one good tropical storm here, that might change everything.
A light one.
Even crabbing. The crabbing's been really hard for these guys out here the last couple of weeks that are out here crabbing. And, you know, I hate to say it, but a lot of guys, I mean, they're cleaning up their crab gear. You know, they're not even going to stay out crabbing because they're just not catching enough crabs to keep going. So
be careful, you know, what you wish for, Kaz. You can be bass for life.
Tropical storm, Kaz, category one.
You're right. I probably got a lot of people ready to shoot me right now for saying that. But, you know, I mean, here's the cool thing. We got lots of good stuff going on coming up. We got the tournament up in the Blitz River this weekend with Scott Sewell and the MR Bass Club. They're putting that thing on. We're going to help them out with that. We also got a little more information. We'll share with you as time goes on. You know, we're putting a big tournament together with the Port Deposit, and that's going to be something that's really, really big up there, and we're looking forward to that. And, You know, before we introduce our next guest, let me tell you about Horsing Enterprises. Horsing Enterprises here on the Eastern Shore. If you need a crab boat, if you need your diesel engine work repaired, if you've lost your transmission, if you're losing slipping gears, things like that, let me tell you what, Benny and Alex, they are some of the best mechanics I've ever seen. And let me tell you another thing. If you want a custom-built Eastern Shore crab boat, let me tell you what, they got a one-of-a-kind mold over there that they're really being quieted out. And this rig is just unbelievable. You want to catch crabs, you want to talk to Benny, you want to talk to Alex. So, Eddie, why don't you go and introduce our guest for us today?
All right, so this week we've got Dylan. Dylan, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm not doing too bad. How about yourself?
Good, man. So for those who don't know you, why don't you just give a quick background about yourself?
All right, so I'm an avid fisherman and hunter. I've been fishing and hunting all my life since I've been able to hold a fishing rod. I've been in the woods with my grandpa in the field hunting since I was able to walk beside him and, you know, sit in the woods with him. I'm up from PA, around the Spring Grove, York area, so I'm not too far away from Blackwater. But, yeah, I'm very avid about the wildlife and the fishery. I want to help preserve it for the future of fishing and hunting.
You know, Dylan, let me start off by this. I know we've known each other for several years. We met on Facebook, you know, I think we're both panfish junkies, from back in the day. And, I see a lot of the work that you're doing up there. And one of the things I want to say about you that I really respect is I see a lot of the way that we work down here and the way that you work up there in regards to the way that you're trying to help people, pass along information to your community, you know, that they may not be aware of. There's a lot of things that you're doing out there. Now, I know you got a Facebook page, and that page, if you want to give it a real quick plug real quick, it's PA and Beyond. Is that what we call it?
PA Fishing Beyond the Water.
Okay. So you've had that page now for how long?
Oh, my gosh. I think I had it for about 7-8 years now, and it's funny because I started it just to have fun and like, I post my reports to have people – they can know what's going on at the lake, stuff like that. They can go out there and catch fish. And where I'm at now with it is insane.
Yeah, I want to talk about the lake. I want to talk about the native trout fishery that's there. And I want to talk about the introduction to snakeheads in your area. We do know that, you know, they're in Redmond. And we've heard reports of some other places, too. But I'm one of them guys that say I need a picture before I can back it up or anything like that, you know. I want to touch a little bit about Marburg. You know, Marburg is a lake that you're very familiar with. You spend a lot of time in there doing a lot of fishing and things like that. What have you done to kind of help, you know, give back to Marburg? I know there's a lot of things that you do.
I start out with the fishermen out there and the hunters. I give back to them mostly. I take them out fishing for free. I'm always out there, you know, showing them how to catch fish. I usually meet up with a lot of people every year to show them the ropes of how to catch fish and pass down their kids and stuff like that and go out there and enjoy the lake itself. That's what it's there for. It's there to enjoy.
Now, I know you say you like a lot of hunting. Before we get into all the fishing, Gary, why don't you go ahead and talk to Dylan about some hunting. You and Eddie asked him a few questions about where he likes to hunt.
Yeah, well, what do you hunt out? You don't have a secondary up there like we do, so you got but
no.
You got elk.
No, we don't. Nope.
No elk there?
Not just too far south. No, we're too far south.
Your whitetail, yeah.
Oh, we just got the whitetail. Whitetail, the occasional bear comes through here. You have to go a bit north for that. Fox, coyote. Waterfowl is a big thing at Marburg, the waterfowl hunting out there.
Gotcha. Is that a public lake, private, or?
Yeah, public. It's a public state park.
Gotcha. So why don't you tell everyone about Marburg and you know, a little bit about that lake? Maybe we should do that first.
Well, Marburg's a big state park. There's fishing, hunting, there's archery areas there, there's rifle areas, slug gun, I should say, muzzleloader there. The fish there, pretty much everything, you know, bass, panfish, pike, muskie. They just introduced stripers in there not too long ago. Walleye. There's actually bowfin in there, too, which is one of the only lakes in southern PA that have bowfin in it. It's a great place to waterfowl hunt. It's one of the stops along the way down south. They stop out a lot. We get some divers, get some puddles up, get a little bit of everything down there.
How's PA's hunting permitting, dude? Is it, you have to have a permit, or is it just public access? Or
public access, yep. If you have a hunt license, you're allowed to hunt there.
Cool. Out of state as well?
Yeah, correct, yep.
Cool.
Gary, you thinking road trip?
I'm always thinking road trip, man. Roadkill, road trip, same thing.
Hey, this might be a good place to take the Snakehead Fishing Club fishing for a day or the weekend. You know, it's actually really nice. I fished it myself. I'm not no season pro there, but I've fished it and I've enjoyed fishing there and I've caught fish there and I think it's a very beautiful place. It's very well maintained and you know, I think that the fishery itself is an all around amazing fishery. You were talking about the stripers. When did they introduce the stripers to Marburg?
I think it's probably about 4 years ago, 5 years ago now.
So what size are these stripers at now? I mean, have you caught any of them?
I haven't caught any yet this year, but upper high 20s, low 30s.
Wow, that's not bad at all.
And how big,
when they put them in there, how big are they?
You're talking inches or pounds?
Inches. Gotcha. High 20s, low 30 inches, yeah.
Now, let me ask you.
Go ahead.
Was the introduction of the stripers to help reduce the population of the overabundance of white perch?
The white perch and gizzard shad, I believe. The gizzard shad are just as bad as the white perch in there. They're in there about 100.
So most lakes that have stripers in them, usually it's a big shad population. That's why they put them in there.
Oh, yeah. This lake is going to produce some big stripers in the near future.
Well, being that we're talking about stripers, I mean, I don't want to jump into things too quick, but it's a good walleye fishery there too. Am I correct in saying that? I've caught some walleye. I haven't caught anything really really big, but I've caught some really nice quality fish, meaning 3 and 4 pounders.
I could say it was. There was some grass. They sprayed some grass or killed some grass out there, and it seemed the walleye population took a big hit. That same year, there was a die off of walleye. And I knew a lot of walleye fishermen out there who are really struggling. They went from catching over 100 in a year to catching maybe 10.
Oh, wow. I did not know that. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I haven't fished Marburg in several years.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've been up there.
5 years ago, it was great walleye fishing. You're catching, yeah. I mean, I've seen 20
that's when it was. That was last there. It was probably 5 or 6 years ago. That was the year that I met Jim Grinnell, and I was fishing Hanover and Shepherd Myers and all them places up there. So it has been a pretty good while. That's pretty crazy that it dropped off that fast. Was there a reason that the walleye were knocked down or died off? Was there a disease or what was it?
The only thing that I noticed happened the same year was the killing of the grass beds. They either sprayed it or dumped some kind of chemical on it to get rid of the grass beds and send them out. And that same year, coincidentally, or not sure what happened, the walleye had a big die off. There was a lot of walleye floating around.
So the stripers were introduced that year of the die-off, or was they introduced the year after the die-off?
A year or two after it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just thinking if it was around the same time, I wonder if that had any impact on them or anything like that.
They were stocked as fingerlings, the stripers were.
Oh, okay. Okay, very good.
Yeah, they were very small. They were stocked pretty small.
So, are you seeing any decline in white perch since they put these rockfish in there, or are you still seeing the massive numbers?
The white perch seem to really... set themselves out. This year, I'm actually pretty struggling to find some big ones. I'm not. Huh. I'm going to see spots I used to, and not really seeing much.
Wow, that's weird. So let's talk about some of the other places
Before you change topics, let's do a quick giveaway sponsored by CCA.
Oh, good. Hey, our good friend Dave, I'm at home, so they got to give me a little plug so I know to get you out here and get you famous. Look, CCA is great in great Chesapeake and base account. You know, if you want to sign up for that. You know, CCA is a sponsor of that tournament. They do a lot of work here in the Chesapeake Bay, and they've definitely been a supporter of us and everything that we've done, and we definitely support everything that they're doing, and we appreciate that they give back to us so much. And some of the prizes that we've been able to give away at our tournaments directly from CCA have been absolutely amazing. We've been giving away some Costa sunglasses there. If you sign up at our tournament, you know, you can win a free pair of Costa sunglasses there. We've got some Traeger grills there that we cook on that were donated by CCA also. The Great Chesapeake and Bay account, the purpose of this is to try to provide real-time data to the Department of Natural Resources and U.S. Fish and Wildlife and to the other platforms that are monitoring the invasive species in the state of Maryland. So if you're catching flathead or you're catching blue cats or you're catching, of course, the ferocious snakeheads, you can bring that fish home, you can measure that fish, you can get the girth, and you can register that fish online. Eddie, what is that link again?
CCAMD.org/count.
So that's where you want to go if you want to register your catch. And it's really a great thing for us. It's going to show us, you know, the spread of the fish, you know, what they're eating. You know, we're reaching out to other places, stuff camping and things like that. So, you know, Gary, I'm not sure. What are we giving away there, Gary?
Giving away a cup, cold or hot, either one. And by the way, this is CCA's 25th year.
Last year was. This
or last year. I'm sorry.
This is 29.
There's 26 years this year.
Never mind.
All right, Cass, so what do you want to say?
What, for the cup?
Yep.
I like big cups.
I like big cups. Put that in the comments, and that's your cup.
There you go.
My nickname used to be Big Cup. When I stopped drinking, I drank sodas by the 44-ounces or 64-ounces, which you can't even buy anymore. And when I was going to the AA meetings, I always had two of these cups in my hand. Yep.
So you ruined it for all of us. Made a law just for you.
I got the nickname in the beginning of Big Cup. That's what they all called me when I first started coming around. So, Dylan, you know, let's get back on the fish here a little bit. You guys got a good population of crappie in Marburg, too, don't you?
Yeah. Yep. You really pretty good. A lot of good fishing all around, really, all species of fish. Have been really abundant in Marbury. Just certain times of year, you can really get into them.
Now, as far as ice fishing goes, do you guys get much of an opportunity to do any ice fishing on that lake?
I haven't ice fished that in years. We just don't get enough. It doesn't get cold enough anymore. I think our last time I was able to get on there.
Well, I know a few years back when I was fishing Shepherd Myers and stuff like that, you know, but that's also a much smaller body of water, too.
Yeah. Shepherd Myers usually freezes up pretty early. Even the past few years, you haven't been getting on there for like 1 or 2 days. And you know, that's it.
Right. I mean, that was like out of Deep Creek 2 years ago. We didn't even go up there. There was just no ice, you know. So, yep. I guess maybe the global warming thing is real, right?
It's hard to say, really. It's a crazy weather patterns we've been having.
Okay, before we get into snakeheads, I want to talk about something that a lot of people have been reaching out to me about, and I've been reaching out to you about, and that is the amount of native trout streams in that area there. Say from I-83 west, just above the Maryland PA line. Now I know you've had an opportunity to fish some of these native trout streams, and I'm not asking for the locations or the names of the streams or anything like that, but I want you to talk about, I don't want to say the importance, but I want to say the abundance of native trout that you guys have available there, because the water is very protected. You know what I'm saying? I mean, describe the native trout fishing to the folks out here that don't understand, you know, what could be impacted down the road from the introduction of snakehead.
We have a lot of native and wild trout streams in southern central PA. Farther north, 10, 20 times more. We have a lot of spring-fed and creek mountain creeks, stuff like that. So right down the road from me, I live near a place that's a trophy trout section. So the state recognized this creek to be a special Class A wild brown trout stream. So it never gets stocked. It's all
Let me stop you. I want you to tell the people that the reason that these trout streams are the class they are is because of the cleanliness and because of the healthiness of these systems.
Correct. I mean, if you know trout are very picky and very, fragile to their environment. So if the environment, if the water gets too warm or it's not clean, they'll die instantly. Not instantaneous, but they'll die. But the trophy trout, it stays cold. I'm talking about 50s, 60s all year round. It's very cold water, and the trout need that. And you go up to the mountains more, you see small feeder creeks, and they're full of native brook trout. And there's some other creeks that are a little bit warmer that I'd be more susceptible to the snakeheads to get in. Like the trophy trout, that's some pretty cold water. I'm not sure how much cold water the snakeheads can withstand. But there's other creeks.
They're in Siberia, aren't they?
So what was that?
Snakeheads go all the way to Siberia. The northern ones, don't they?
Yes, they okay, do.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure how cold it was. I have no comments. These beautiful waterways that we can walk along the creek and catch these beautiful fish are in great danger.
And it's not just the fish. It's the microorganisms and the other aquatic animals that are there that are important to the survival of those trout, correct?
Yeah, I mean, all the insects, all the invertebrates. Some of the streams I fish have freshwater clams in them that are protected by the state. All that at stake with this going on.
Do you have, like, hellbenders, those big salamanders, any of those in there?
Up further north, we'll see more of them.
Yeah.
They're starting to come back around as well. They were kind of struggling there for a little bit, but you're seeing a lot more people catch them now.
Yeah, they're like, you know, the coolest thing, man. I think they're really neat looking.
I would love to see one in person. Them and eels are really starting to make a comeback around the area.
So let's talk about where we're hearing that snakeheads are showing up. I know that here recently that we've... before I get into that, let me ask you, did they stock Marburg with trout?
They used to. They stopped doing that 4 years back because they figured it was a waste of money because the fish were just getting eaten up by the pike and muskie. The fish knew they were getting stocked and they're getting slammed.
Okay. I wanted to ask you that because I knew 6-7 years ago I thought they were still doing that.
Yeah, no, they have. They stopped probably about maybe 5-6 years ago.
Okay. So it's right there in that same time frame I was up there. They were still stocking trout.
Yeah.
Well, that's a thing. Stop doing that. Do they stock Redmond with trout at all?
No, they don't.
Are there creeks that feed Redmond that house native trout?
Cadores Creek runs into Redmond or runs out of Redmond. Runs into Redmond. So the Cadores Creek is connected to it. And then eventually that will lead to all the fingerlings, the trophy trout section, at least to Marbury, at least connects everything together. I mean, Cadores Creek eventually connects everything pretty much. And it'll connect to the Quinnah River.
So basically, Redmond is at the bottom of this domino, let's say.
Yeah, correct.
So once the snakeheads have got into Redmond, then they can shoot up that river and they can get to all the other places that we're talking about that are really beautiful and really, really impactive, you know, up there as far as a fishery for the locals to enjoy.
Once they get into Cadores Creek, the possibilities where they can go is pretty much endless. They can go all around the Susquehanna Valley where I live.
And let me ask you this. Somebody had made a comment about Lake Redmond and there being a pipe connected to the Susquehanna River. Now, is that true, first of all?
Yes. I do believe they can draw water in from the Susquehanna River when the Redmond's had a bad drought. They don't use it often.
Okay. So it could be possible that the snakeheads came in through that, but seeing the amount of numbers that we see, I mean, you have to think if they were coming to the 2-1 or 2 rod, and then you might not see a lot of snakeheads. I guess the question I'm wondering is, I mean, do we think that these fish came through that tube, or do we really lean towards the fact that they were put into somebody's lunchbox and brought up the road and dumped in there?
It doesn't matter once they're there.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, about the Batman, I'm willing to bet that they were put in there by someone, either once or multiple times, because just out of nowhere, we're just seeing these 20-inch fish, these 17-inch fish.
Well, it's hard to say from that way, because snakeheads can grow so fast. I mean, a year-old snakehead's 12 inches.
Right.
So if it's there for 2 years, you're talking an almost 20-inch fish.
Okay.
You got one pair of fish in there can give you 40,000 fish in a year.
Right.
So if you had multiple pairs in there, then that would produce the numbers that you're probably seeing.
Pairs is the second year of the first pair.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not sure how often they open that pipe up is the thing. I don't think they use it very often, and it's a public kind of lingo as well.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, but if they just use it once and snakeheads get through there, I mean, that changes the whole game for you.
But I think the thing here is that because it's above Conowingo, that's where the pipe's drawn from, and not below Conowingo in the Susquehanna, that the likelihood of the amount of snakeheads dumping in at one time, I mean, I'm sure it could happen, but that's why I lean more towards the side of, you know, somebody put them there. But like Gary said, it doesn't matter. They're there now. So now it's what you do with them.
Exactly.
You know, how do you handle the introduction? I mean, we know what we did. You know, what does TA do? You know, where are they? What are they doing? Dylan, have you reached out to anybody up there to talk to anybody?
I tried contacting the state. I haven't heard anything back. And I contacted the York County Parks as well, which is in charge of Redmond. The state isn't in charge of Redmond.
Okay, well, if you take Kaz's way of getting the state's attention. It's good. You're going to be labeled the crazy snakehead guy of Pennsylvania. So,
I've been trying to get someone's attention, at least.
Well, I think the reason that Eddie, I wanted to reach out to Dylan is because I've known him so long, and I know how active he is and how he's a lot like us, and he really gives a crap about where he's at. You know what I mean?
All right. Before we go any further, let's do one more giveaway. We got a pack of a pack of old school baits here, sponsored by the Bait Boys. Kaz, tell them about the Bait Boys.
Thank you. Hey, our good friend, the Bait Boys, Damien Tall. Look, if you need soft crabs, he is shedding soft crabs, bait crabs right now like you wouldn't believe, and you can find them at Angler Sports Center. If you're visiting Dorchester County, you're down here, and you want to go snakehead fishing, you definitely want to check out the Bait Boys Facebook page. Put a message over there. Ask where you can get some bait, and somebody will get back to you, and they will let you know when you can get the bait and how you can get that so you can be successful on your trip here to the Eastern Shore. Like I said before, we're here to help everybody. The Bait Boys are here to help everybody. We're here to make sure that your trip is successful. If you need lodging, we got lodging available. If you need a guide, we got a guide available. If you need minnows, we got the Bait Boys. So Snakehead Destroyers, that's what we sell. Ask for them by name. If they don't sell them at your local tackle shop, tell them they should have them, especially if you got snakehead in there. Snakehead Destroyers is the only thing that I recommend if you're going to be bait fishing or Snakehead Destroyers swim bait. So, all right. So you reached out to some people there. You're talking
to
some
people. What do you want them to say, Cass? What do you want them to say?
What do you want? Gary, you pick. What do you want to say, Gary?
Hold on there. Oh, my.
All right. What do they got to say, Gary?
Think pink.
Think pink.
Easy enough.
What is it?
Think
pink. Pink. They're pink.
They're pink. Yeah, think pink.
Pink, pink. Oh, God. Here we go.
Hold on there, Bob Louie.
So put that in the comments. You can have them them baits from the Bait Boys. So Dylan, so you're reaching out to people, you're talking to people. I know you care about things. Have you heard any other places there that they're saying that the snakeheads are?
Not really. There was a couple years ago out in Lancaster County, there was one confirmed at a pond, but Redmond's pretty much the hot place right now that they're seeing them. I haven't really heard of any other lakes or creeks nearby that had them.
Have you talked to anybody that had caught them in Redmond?
I reached out, and actually, thank God, people are being cooperative with it and are giving me the information that I'm looking for to help stop these fish.
So, I sent you some pictures of the, I think I did, I'm not sure if I did. I had a friend, after me and you first started talking 2 weeks ago about the whole Redmond deal and what was going on. He told me he was going to go up there, and he was going to walk the shoreline with a spotlight. And when he did, he started sending me pictures. And I'm not sure if I sent the picture to you or not. Did I?
I didn't.
You did see it or you didn't?
No, I did not see those.
You did not see it. So anyway, I'll send it to you later. But as he was walking around a particular cove, and I won't say the name, I'll send you his information because he said he would talk to you. He wasn't worried about that. But he walked around with a spotlight and his camera, and he was taking pictures of, you know, the gravel in the bottom. And unbeknownst to he sent me a picture and said, "What is this?" And I wrote him right back. I said, "That's definitely a snakehead." He said, "Man," he said, "I got to tell you." He said, "They're all over the bottom." Now, these fish were only probably 4 to maybe 5 inches long. So I would say it's probably a spawn already of this year, okay, looking at the size of what he was showing. And to see those fish at that size, that tells me right away that there is successful colonization going on right now as we speak, you know? So I'll send you them pictures later and you can talk to him, but what are most of the guys that fish there saying? Do they want to get them out? Are they glad they're there? I mean, what are they saying?
Well, to back you up on the fish fry thing, they're 100% spawning and actually being successful at it. A lot of fish are being caught on fry balls. You know, the male and female are guarding right now. So that's 100% believable. I 100% agree with that. What are people saying? I'm having about probably 75-25%. 75% of people are wanting them gone. And then 25% of people who say they're fine, they're not going to do anything, and they're staying there. But so far, that everyone I talked to that caught them have killed them and taken them home or, you know, discarded them.
Now, what are the folks up there saying? Are they eating them? What are they saying about the meat?
Yes. So far, I talked to people and they're loving how good they are, which is, you know, production is a good thing or a bad thing. Might want people to keep them around a bit longer.
Well, I think it's a good thing that they're eating, but I also think that if they're there, and I think that you're going to have plenty here very soon. So I think you have to worry about that. I think the thing here is like where we were. You know, what do we do? How do we approach it? Where do we go from here? You know, unfortunately, you know, it took too long to get the attention here that we needed. So that's why we are where we are. You know. I mean, Gary can tell you. I mean, Gary, tell him a little bit about, you know, what's happened to the forage here and what's going on. You know, what they can expect to see at the Rudd.
Well, the thing is, I don't think it really matters. You're not going to get the attention until the problem is there. You know, I was talking to Grant today about that. Data takes time. And these fish are so fast at reproducing and colonizing that the problem is already in crisis before you ever really get the data to find out how bad it is. That's the problem with them. There's nothing else that I know of in the United States that breeds and multiplies as many times a year as they do fish-wise.
Phragmites.
Yeah, phragmites. but I mean, as far as fish goes, I can't think of another fish that we have, maybe bulminus,
right,
that reproduce four or five times a year.
Oh, I agree.
And the growth rate is as well.
Right. I mean, here's the thing, Dylan. I mean, like, here, you know, like, we have proven that our fish can be gravid at 9 inches, meaning that they can reproduce at 9 inches, you know. So, and that fish is really only an eight-month-old fish that's from the first breed of the year or the late fall breed, you know what I'm saying? So we thought that it didn't get mature until we were going off other data that had been collected by other places. And what we saw here, and it may just be the fishery because we're much shallow, we're much hotter, we're much warmer. You know, everybody asked me, do you think that because the water's so shallow, that's why you guys boom the way you boom? Sure, I'm sure that has something to do with it. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that. You know, we don't have deep water. We don't have deep water lakes like that, you know? So of course, these fish can multiply very, very fast here. I think the fish are going to multiply fast there, and you're not going to see the fish that are multiplying because they're going to go deep or they're going to go high, you know? Well, where a lot of these fish here don't have that opportunity.
What surprised me the most was how much they're already dispersed around the lake. They're not just concentrated in one area right now. They're dispersed.
So they're catching them all over the lake, not just one place.
Yeah, I mean, it's they're not just in one spot. They're towards the end of the lake, but they're all over the place. I mean, they're not congregated like I thought they'd be in the shallows.
Huh. That's not good.
It'd be interesting to see how they interact with the muskies.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I thought they'd be in the shallow flat, but nah. I mean, they caught some in some semi deep water already.
So let's talk about the species that are in Marburg. What do we have there? I know we have several, and there's a lot of trophy species there. And I know that the name Redmond, you know, that the folks that know it, the locals that fish, and the people that have put time in there. I mean, I fished it years ago, and when I say years ago, I was in my early 20s. You know, and we caught some nice stripers there and hybrids there and things like that. I remember that. But I haven't fished that lake in, God knows, probably 10, 15, 20 years maybe. I don't know. So let's talk about the species that are in there. What do you have in that lake?
Redmond, it's probably most known for its stripers.
Right.
Always in there.
What's the lake record on striper? Do you know?
I'm not sure exactly. That's Marburg has an upkeep of that. I'm not sure if Redmond actually has the actual official document of that.
Okay. I mean, 30-pound stripers, 40-pound stripers in there. I mean, I caught 10 and 15 when I was there.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely 30-pound stripers.
All right. And what are the stripers eating on, I guess, is my first question, because that's just going to be competing with these snakeheads, and which I'm sure they're competing with the muskies too. Is the muskie population very big?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely have the white perch in there. I think what they're probably feeding on the most. I'm not sure if they have shad in there or not. They might have those alleywives in there. I'm not 100% sure on that.
Now the muskies, alleywives, I like that. You like that, Gary? Alleywives?
how do you guys say them?
Elwives.
Elwives. Elwives. It don't matter.
Man hating, and you can't go wrong.
That's right.
Right. As a corn star, I always write L-Y. That's what he writes in the comments when somebody asks if he needs some. So you got
hold
the
on,
white
Kaz, before,
there.
Before you go any further, let's do one more giveaway here. We got a Nantaburi Chenadai frog here to be given away, sponsored by Bass Rack Outdoors.
Our good friend Kevin Hogan, Bass Rack Outdoors. Folks, if you need some nice apparel, and if you don't know what Bass Rack Outdoors is, you just really need to go Google that and see what it is, because it's lots of cool apparel, lots of cool stickers, just lots of cool, fun stuff. Home of the Snakehead Hunter t-shirt. Look, if you haven't seen that t-shirt, that thing is absolutely amazing. These hats are absolutely amazing. Quality stuff, quality products, quality service. But there's one other thing. Gary, why don't you tell them about the spices?
I was just getting ready to say, don't forget the spices. Kevin's, Kevin's grandfather?
Yep.
Is that
his grandfather?
I can't remember his name, but it's a cool story behind the whole thing. He's come out with a line of spices, and basically they're in honor of his grandfather. And
I'll tell you what, and you can bat me up. They're absolutely delicious, aren't
they?
We
are.
Had them at our last tournament. We did oysters on the grill, we did snakehead on the grill, and we used Bass Rack Outdoor spices, and they were absolutely just delicious.
Yeah, they were.
So we got white perch. What's the
Kaz?
Crappie and bluegill?
Hold on there,
Kaz.
Buddy.
I forgot. We got to pick something. This is me doing it at home. I'm not there with you guys. So.
What do you want him to say to win this frog?
Ribbit.
I like it. Ribbit. Ribbit gets you the frog.
All right, ribbit, you get the frog. So the bluegills and the crappie. If I seem to remember right, we went up there, I think it was a late May the one year, and we were using slip bobbers, and we were fishing structure in about, I think it was 10 to 15 feet, mostly logs, lay downs, and stuff like that. And, I was really impressed by the size of bluegill that I caught there when I went there. Is that bluegill fishery still the same? Is it still a great fishery?
I haven't fished there in a couple of years for crappie and bluegill, but when I used to fish there, I used to get a lot of good numbers of fish in there. I used to catch, like you said, a lot of different sizes, a lot of nice size average fish.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just listening to you. Go ahead.
Yeah, so you can call a lot of average size fish, but a lot of good numbers of fish. And they're collating too huge, but I've seen pictures of nice crappie come out of there. But I think there's a lot of numbers in there, and less, you know, more quantity, but not too much quality. But
so,
a lot of deep fish.
So that would probably explain how the rockfish stays so fueled and so big, then, if they've got, you know, a relative abundance, we'll call it. That's what I'm curious to see, what happens to the relative abundance that's in the lake. Because what's happened here with the relative abundance is it got knocked down. That does one of two things. It decreases the population, it increases the size of the fish you catch, but it also discredits the fishery over the next 4 or 5 years, you know what I'm saying, until it can readjust and reestablish.
Correct.
I guess my question is, you know, with the introduction of the snakeheads, now they're competing with the rockfish, and they're going to be competing with muskie. Is there walleye in the lake?
Yes, there. I don't think there's any muskie or pike. There might be a few pike in there, but mostly stripers, walleye, and largemouth are pretty much the main apex predators in there.
Okay, so let's talk about the largemouth. What's the average size largemouth in that lake?
Probably like Marburg. You know, you get 3 or 4 pounders, you know, this time of year, and you know you can get some nice 5-6 pounders as well.
So the average size, you would say, like, what if I came up there and fished for the day? What can I expect my average bass to be for the day? If I caught 5 of them, would you say I'm averaging about 1 to 2 pounds a piece? I mean, that's generally what the average is of a bass caught, you know, in anywhere that you're fishing is 1 to 2 pounds, maybe 2.5. So I guess my question is there large numbers of, you know, you just told me there's big bass. That tells me you got big females. What is your smaller bass population looking like?
I feel like there's a lot more, probably cookie cutter size, probably like 12 to 15 inches. In there,
okay.
But, and my buddies who fish there a lot are catching this 3 to 4 pounder as well. So there's definitely some nice fish in there, but there's definitely a lot of smaller, like 12 to 15 inch fish in there.
Cool. You know what I'd like to know? Something I'd be really curious of, if I had access to that lake, would be the people who catch the. You don't have northern pike in there, but you do have muskies. The people that catch the muskies, gut sample them and see if they're eating snakeheads.
Right.
I have a sneaky suspicion. A couple people have asked me, when I eat snakeheads, do I scale them or do I flay them out and skin them? And I skin almost all my fish. And I just have a sneaky feeling they've got that exo slime on them almost like something out of Ghostbusters. And yeah. I just have a feeling that stuff is real bitter tasting.
Right.
And I'm just really curious. We don't have an apex predator here that's going to eat them. You know, bass will eat the little ones, but the little ones don't quite have, you know, they haven't built up that big slime like the larger ones do. But it'd be really interesting to see if the muskies are actually going to eat them, if they'll tolerate the slime on them by, you know, eating them. Because then you're going to have the same situation that everybody else has.
Yep.
You know, I mean, my biggest concern is just, I mean, here's the thing, man. I don't care what anybody says, dude. All right? Anybody out there is not going to change my mind. You can't tell me that a 15-pound snakehead, or just let's say a 10-pound snakehead, is not out competing your 12 to 15-inch bass.
Well, that's what I'm saying, Cass. But if you got the muskies in there and they'll eat them,
right,
then that could slow them down. But if the muskies won't eat them, then the situation is going to be the same there as it is everywhere else.
Not just that, but now your 10-pound musk, now your 10-pound snakeheads are out-competing your walleye, they're out-competing your bass, they're out-competing your chain pickerel, they're out-competing everything that's under there, you know what I mean? And that's why I wanted to bring Dylan in here today, because I really wanted to, like, just kind of throw some awareness out there and help him, you know, and just, you know, that lake is fragile, man. That lake is beautiful. That lake has got great fish, man, in my opinion, you know? And I just can't understand how people can keep sitting here saying, oh, well, they're not going to do anything. It's great that they're here. You know, that's just, I just can't understand that.
One thing I know is, Marver's a huge muskie lake, and I know muskie, I'm not sure how often they'll run into each other, because muskie like to sit in some deeper, cooler water, except for the springtime when they move shallows like that to feed and breed like that, but most of the time they're sitting in a lot deeper water and cooler water. So I'm not sure how often they would actually come in contact with a snakehead if a snakehead's not spending in open water, like the, you know, white perch.
If you're hungry, they'll come up.
They come up and feed
at night or something.
Yeah, it's like marbers like that. I know the muskie are sitting fairly deep. And how do snakeheads react with structure? Do they like structures like that?
They remind me a lot of pickerel. they do kind of the same thing as pickerel. They love grass. They'll lay right down in the grass. They'll lay behind a log like a bass does. And if it's any sticks or anything, they'll get right in the middle of it.
And here's another thing that will help snakehead anglers that are up there fishing. Remember this as just a pro pointer tip or whatever you want to call it. You know, if you're fishing on a piece of structure, and it's not breeding season, it's not pairing season, it's not, you know, it's eating season, let's say, okay? You're in the spring, you're in the fall, you know, you're going into the winter, you know, these fish are feeding off. Remember this, if you catch one fish off a piece of structure, most likely because they pack up and they school up when they do this, there's another fish waiting to take that fish's place on that exact same wall.
Right.
And I can tell you this from here, and Eddie can tell you, and Gary can tell you, there's been many a day that we've sat on one log and pulled 30, 40 fish off of that log. I can tell you there was a bridge that I fished one day with Wayne Brown. He can back me up on this. I caught 27 snakeheads off of the same piling. Couldn't catch them off any other piling on the bridge, but caught 27 snakeheads off that same piling. And I got to believe this, you know, when one eats, they all eat. When they're in that frame of mind, they're in that season, you know what I'm saying?
Well, it's the same thing happened when we were fishing with the congressman. Well, the one congressman caught four of the five fish caught, and he caught them all in the same spot. As soon as he caught the one off there, another one moved in that same. It was just a point there, where it's just a good ambush point. And as soon as he took the one off the point, another one moved right into that same point. It happened four times that day.
Yep, that was Congressman Thornberry, I think that was his name. Yep. And I told him that if he caught that first one, I said stay right there. And I don't know if you remember this or not, but he gave up the spot to that other congressman, and I guess he just wasn't chasing him.
Right.
He kind of stood there for a minute, and then he went back, and then, you know, Mr. Thornberry jumped back in there, and bam, he got another three, you know? So yeah, just try to remember that too, Dylan. If you do get on them and you're in the spring, you're in the late fall or something like that, and you got a spot or a pinch point, man, that's the spot that they'll stack up in. A lot of folks don't realize this, and we know this just because we know. I mean, once you're away from breeding season, you're in them cooler months. I mean, these fish pack up, man, and they pack up by size. You know, I've always told people that, you know, if you're fishing in the wintertime and you're looking to have a numbers day, but if you're looking for big fish, you know, forget the numbers day. If you're in the wintertime, you're looking for big fish, you keep moving until you find that one 10-pounder. You find that one 10-pounder, that one deep pocket, man, you're going to find the whole load laying there on the bottom, and you ain't got to move, you know? And I think that's something that you'll see in these lake systems that these fish are getting in, is that, you know, just like over in Russia and places like that, you know, when winter gets here, they're going to drop to the bottom. They're going to pack up. When it gets a little warm, they're going to move around by the school and try to look for food and work together so that they all can eat. That's one thing that I've noticed. It seems like, you know, they don't like to be buddies outside of winter, but it seems like when winter gets here, man, they help each other. And I don't know if I'm wrong by thinking
Wait. I thought you said they liked eating popcorn and Skittles together.
No, that was with largemouth bass.
So it's only with other fish. It's not with each other.
Yeah, just not with each other.
I just wanted to clarify that. That's okay. That's clear.
When snitches pop up like that, I call them marauders, man, because all they do is just eat and eat, you know? But think about it, Eddie. I mean, we'll go back to a couple winters ago. You know, Newbridge, Packers, Mud Shad, 5-6 snakeheads on each side of it, all working together, ripping through the school, then reconvening to bring that school shad back together just to rip it apart again, you know? Yep. So,
like dolphins.
I mean, we've seen this stuff. So I'm actually see what happens in lakes, you know? I want to see how they relate to structure and how they school. That's really what I want to see.
Lakes are clear. You could film it, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't really tell here, but you could actually get down and film in a lake.
But before we ask any more questions, let's do one more giveaway here. We've got a pack of Snakehead Destroyer swim baits here, sponsored by Roy Bradshaw's Body Shop.
My good friend Roy Bradshaw. Look, folks, if you're down here on the Eastern Shore and you get yourself in a pickle, you call my good friend Roy. He'll get you out there before you get a ticket. Look, a lot of folks down here, you're coming down, you just accidentally jump off the side of the road and you go in that muddy ditch and you can't get out. Roy Bradshaw's phone's just a phone call away. Look, if you hit a deer and you bust your headlights all to hell and you need a new car, look, Roy Bradshaw's Body Shop. He'll help you out right here and he'll get you straight and get you back on the road. Just a good all-around guy, good guy in the community, and we're proud to have him on board and proud to have him as a sponsor. And Mr. Roy Bradshaw, we want you to know that we want to take you fishing sometime. I know you're just too busy to get out with us, but that door is always open. We'd like to sit on the side of the bank with you for about 4 hours and shoot the breeze. So if you want to win that Snakehead Destroyer pack, Eddie, you pick something.
Let's say, hold on. After reading the comments from the last one, I want to find something that's going to be really good for autocorrect, because the autocorrects from the last giveaway were fantastic. Before I pick this, I want to read these real quick.
Okay, go ahead.
Ribbit turned into rabbit ribbon, ripping ribbit, rubbit rabbit, and what was the last one? Ribbit rubbit. So we need a good autocorrect giveaway phrase here.
I don't know. Come on, you take it.
Don't drive like Kaz. Yeah, okay.
Don't drive like Kaz. Don't drive like Kaz. That's I love right. it.
He's got a rolling account with Roy.
don't drive like Kaz, and you get yourself some swim baits.
Don't drive like Kaz. You don't drive like me. You total another month. But thank God I got good friends in my corner to help me find a vehicle when I'm down and out. Thanks, Gary. I forgot what we were even talking about. What were we talking about here? Help me out.
We're talking about the snakeheads and the schooling.
Back to the schooling. So that's what I'm curious to see. And here's the thought. With what Gary just said, Dylan, maybe you ought to invest in a little GoPro and see if you can't get some YouTube stuff going for yourself. And I get some of that stuff on film up there down there in the wintertime when they're laying down on the bottom not doing nothing.
Yeah. Bremen's a little bit muddier than some of the other crystal clear lakes. If they get to Marburg, you can get some really good footage. That's where it's crystal clear.
Okay. But,
yeah, we'll try to get some good footage for that. But yeah, I was going to ask about the schooling of the fish, because I was wondering, I saw that they feed in schools. I was going to ask you if they help each other out. If you already answered, they kind of do. They help each other school the fish back up and feed out like, almost one at a time. yeah. each other out. That's incredible. To see a fish do that, that's something to worry about.
Well, and I said that day that I watched it, because the day that this happened, now we're talking about cold water, there was ice. I was in the corner fire that day, and there was ice probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 feet off the bank. Just skim ice, but it was out, you know what I mean? And the main channel where we were at fishing, we were actually yellow perch fishing, what we were doing, jigging them off the ponds when this happened. And the water, I forget what he said it was, but it was like 34 or 35 out there in the middle. So it was that cold, and to watch those fish move at the speed that they did is what really, really threw a curveball at us. Because we thought in the beginning that the fish were supposed to hibernate, which, you know, the first couple of years here, we didn't catch fish during the winter. You know, they did. I don't know if they hibernated late in the mud or they just weren't adaptive. But we noticed here the adaptability of the fish. And I think that's the biggest thing about a snake that a lot of people overlook, is that they can simply adapt to every, just about whichever presented to them. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's not a problem for them to do that. So, you know, I mean, you're talking about the lake, it's cold, it's deep. I mean, time's going to tell what they're going to do. You know what I mean? That's going to really tell us, you know. You know, the other thing, too, I mean, I don't know if these guys gut checking anything that they're keeping?
Unfortunately not. I asked everyone that I caught one, and they aren't. Okay. But I put it out there now that I want people to, so hopefully in the next couple that are caught, I will get to see what's going on inside there, some of their eating.
And maybe what you might want to do is log it, you know, so that when somebody does believe you or hears you and reaches back out to you, that you've got something that you can give them, because that's what I did with Jim Thompson. You know, Jim Thompson, you know, everybody thought I was nuts. There's no way you're catching 100 snakeheads in a roadside ditch that's 1 foot wide by 1 foot deep, you know, and I'm like, okay. When he came down here and he saw that, you know, then I was able to present the case. You know, at the end of the day, I looked at him and I said, Jim, what do you think? He said, dude, you guys got a big problem. You know, there was no doubt in his mind after seeing what he saw. And even Andy Harris and the congressman, when we took them fishing, we didn't catch nothing but snakeheads. We didn't catch anything else. You know, and he even said that, you know, that's really alarming that, you know, we haven't caught anything else, you know. So, I don't know. I guess I would be curious to see what they're eating in the lake, you know, from the jump, you know, to see if it changes or switches over time. Because we've watched here, and Gary, you can certainly back this up about the amount of food that's available here. Mm. You know, they work on one species, you know, that they'll find something they like. When they find what they like, then they eat that till there's not much of it, then they find something else. And we know that's what's happened here because we watched in the beginning with frogs, crayfish, chain pickerel, bass, yellow perch, bluegill, catfish, eels, carp. Now they're eating carp. You know, they never ate carp in the numbers that they're eating carp, you know? It's because the food that was here is gone, and it's not bullcrap, you know? Our resident white perch are gone. Store. You know, I mean, and Gary, I mean, you can back it up. You know, you've seen right. it. You've seen it every day when you're out there fishing with these guys. What have you gone from? You've gone to catching, you know, 5, 10, 15 a day to... You're struggling to get some in the boat, and part of the reason is because there's no food. They've left. They've gone into other rivers. They're in the Chick. They're in the Trans, and they've moved out of Big Blackwater.
Dylan, I've got a question for you. The people that are catching them up here, are they catching them on live bait, or are they catching them on artificial bait?
So I had one guy caught one on a bluegill, one guy caught one on a worm, one guy caught one on a fly rod. He's using a green net trying to catch bluegills. Mm-hmm. He caught one that way.
Freddie Reeves is like that. Freddie, we're fly fishing in Lake
Redmond.
Go check them out.
What I'm wondering is how their vision is pretty good. And here our water's real dirty. I mean, they call it black water for a reason. And so a lot of times they're actually striking in a movement. They can't really tell that there's a leader on it or whatever you got. You know, I use braid and I don't use fluorocarbon because they can't really see it. But in that clearer water, it'd be really interesting to see how well they can see. You know, it's like difference in yellowfin and bluefin tuna. I really wonder if they can see as well as like a yellowfin tuna, that they can pick out that leader off of there or see the little imperfection in a lure and realize that it's a lure, not a fish.
You know, the other thing, I think in clearer lakes, I think, and it's just me, you know, I've noticed in a lot of clearer water that the snakeheads don't necessarily stay as high in the water column. They actually stay down lower. And if you look Dylan, here's something that you might want to, you know, mention to these guys, especially the crappie fishermen, things like that. The position of their eyes on their head, they can see very good above them. You know what I mean? So I think that's why in some of these clear lakes and these clear bodies of water that you're seeing them down lower in the water column because they don't need to sit up so high to hear something or to feel something in the lateral line. You know what I mean?
Which that makes perfect sense because a lot of people who are catching snakeheads right now are catfishermen. They're using worms for catfish. They're using half a bluegill for catfish like that. So they're bottom fishing.
Oh, wow. Now this is a game changer. I didn't know that. This is a whole game changer here, Bubba. Wow.
Yep. Yeah, a lot more bottom fishing. For catfish.
That's interesting news there.
I don't even know how to come back on that, Gary. I don't even know how to come back on that.
I don't know. I've never bought a fish one.
Me either.
Never tried that.
I do remember hearing some reports of people bottom fishing for perch with bloodworms, and they'll hit them every once in a while, but nothing consistent like this.
Yeah, like over Key Wallace, you know,
yeah, exactly.
On the top and bottom, they get one. Cornflower, when he's blue catfishing over in the marsh, you know, dropping cut bluegill and shit like that, he'll catch them, but they're 10 pounds, 15 pounds of laying down there with them blue cats, you know?
Here's another twist with that. You know, here our minnows swim through the water, and they don't really try to hide because the water's so dark, they just kind of swim around, so the snakeheads kind of do the same thing. In a clear lake, fish aren't going to openly swim. They're most likely going to be either on the edges, behind something, or down on the bottom. So they're probably following the food.
Yep, you know? That's it. That's the key.
Wow. That's like, I don't even know what to say after that. I mean, I was under the impression they're bobber fishing, buzz bait and swim bait and things like that, but you're saying they're not doing that. They're just out there throwing a worm on the bottom and they're catching them.
Yes. I had one guy catch one today on a fly rod, trying to fish a bluegill. I had one guy catch one on a trick worm bass fishing. But other than that, it seems like worms and a cut bluegill. And I think the first one I was ever caught out there was actually a nighttime. He was nighttime fishing for catfish out there.
That's crazy.
So now my next question is, what are they doing on the bottom? You know, why are they down there?
That's where the food is.
Food's
not out in the open water, Kaz. It's clear. You know, minnows aren't going to be swimming around in open water because everything in the world can see them. Same way with the perch or whatever else. They're going to be down on the bottom or around structure or something. So that's where the snakeheads are going to go.
Wow.
Redmond has lots of structure there.
Yeah.
Wow, man. Dylan, you got to make sure that whoever you talk to up there, biologist wise, that you make sure that they know that. Because now I'm just sitting here thinking, wow, man. You think about all your fry and all your small fish, man. That's where they go. You know, that's where they go to hide.
They're extremely adaptable fish. There's no doubt about that. I mean, they've proven that to us. They can adapt to pretty much anything.
There's something down there they want. And if they're all over, so you're saying these guys are bottom fishing all over the lake and catching on that?
Correct.
Wow. Oh, my God. Jim Thompson, I hope you're listening, Jim Thompson.
These fish are not congregated in one area of that lake. And I have, I've been keeping data. I have records of where fish are caught. I have marked it on the map and what they use and all kinds. I mean, I've been keeping data of it all, and it's not just in one spot.
How deep is this water?
How deep the Redmond is?
I mean, how deep are these guys catching these fish?
It really depends. So some are the one guy caught them in some shallow water when they're on the fry ball course, but the other guy catching when they're fishing catfish. I'm not even sure, honestly. I'm not sure. I have no really idea how deep the water they're fishing in.
That must be something else you want to monitor. Yeah. Find out how deep the water was where they caught them. That'd 100%. Be interesting. God, they've gone to a new low now. They're bottom feeders.
I really hope that Jim Thompson, Jay Law, and Josh Newhart are all listening to this. You know, I really do.
Guys, you got any one more for Dylan? We're running short on time.
All right. Dylan, look, we got sitting there, and I want to bring you back next week for part two now.
Always down. I'm always on the lookout. I'm trying to touch down and get some people's attention, but it's a struggle right now. But, hey. I'm not quitting. I'm going to keep these snakehead of bed.
Look. I see you doing what I did. Don't you give up, dude. Believe me, there are lots of people trying to rain on my parade, lots of people that troll me, lots of people that cuss me, lots of people that threw rumors around, and just lots of just dirty, dirty people, bro. You worry about what you care about. If you care about, then you do what you got to do. I tell everybody, if you believe in it, fight for it, man.
I'm right there at the front line. I'm taking this head on. You know, people who are behind me, they're behind me. If not, I'll be alone.
Okay, before we let you go, Dylan, I want you to plug a couple of your sponsors. I know you got some sponsors out there you want to talk about. Talk about the shop that you help out in, where people can come to you at. You know, you'll be at that shop.
Yeah, so luckily at WE Sells in Hanover on York Street, it's a hunting and fishing shop. They have guns, they have ammo, they have fishing rods, they have lures, they have a little bit of everything there. It's a one-stop shop. And in the shop, I carry the baits I use, the crappy fishing like that. They use contraband baits, Bo Bowers jigs. They have kick and bass fish attractant. I'm trying to get Denali rods in there. I'm trying to get vicious fishing line. They have National Forest bass baits in there. If you use local bass fishing, they have swim baits in there. You can start using snakeheads once you know. Try to catch snakeheads out there with some beautiful looking swim baits.
Well, we might have to get you some snakehead destroyer swim baits up there to your shop.
Yeah,
we'll see what we got for you.
Get some beds up here.
Look, Dylan, I want to thank you. I'm Gary and Eddie, I'm sure, thank you too. And
yeah, for sure.
Look, we're going to be back in touch with you because this is something that we definitely want to revisit here, you know, maybe in another month. So you keep piling up that data. And what I'm going to do for you here, you have my word, I'm going to start on PA next. So I'm here to help you, okay?
Thank you guys so much. It's been an honor to be a part of this.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, thank you. Interesting conversation.
Hey, thank you. We're gonna ask the week spotlight.
Well, yeah, yep. That's what I was just about to touch on. This week we've got our snakeheadlife.com angler spotlight of the week, sponsored by the Land Group, submitted by Jeff Frock. Kaz, why don't you tell everybody about the Land Group?
So Land Group, our good friend Rob Fryer. Look, if you missed that beautiful piece you had up there for $300,000. $400,000 I was down here. Let me tell you what, it had everything that you wanted and could dream of. Trophy sucker, trophy snakehead. I mean, I ain't kidding you. I know the property. And look, Rob Fryer is just a stand-up guy. If you're looking for that dream property, that place that you want to call home, that place that you want to go just to get away from the world because it's just gotten so crazy you just can't deal with it anymore, and you need land and you need dirt, he's the guy that you want to find. Look, When I decide it's time to escape, I'm going to call my good friend Rob Fryer. Y'all ain't ever going to see me again. You're going to hear about me 100 years from now in the woods somewhere about this old guy that rotted away eating snakeheads. So, look, the Land Group, give him a call. Check out Rob Fryer.
And like I said, this was submitted by Jeff Frock. He said it was his son, if I remember correctly. This one was 33 1/4 inches and 12.1 pounds. Very nice snakehead. Also,
why don't we touch on the fishing club and the tournament real quick, and then we'll get out of here.
That was the next thing on my list. our Snakehead Life Fishing Club, the next meeting is August 18th, which is a week from tomorrow. It's $50 a year to join the club, and we've got all kinds of projects we're working on. The next tournament is September 18th, and that is the Blackwater Snakehead Open. That is the final tournament of our series for the year, sponsored by Angler Sports Center. And like I said, everybody's competing for that Angler of the Year prize, sponsored by CCA Maryland's Great Chesapeake Invasive Count. The current leader is Justin Klein with 324 points for the Angler of the Year prize. We also have optional Calcuttas like all the other three tournaments. We have the heaviest of the tournament, sponsored by Bass Rack Outdoors. Longest of the tournament, sponsored by Horseman Enterprises. The most harvested, sponsored by the Land Group. The heaviest of the year, sponsored by the Bait Boys. And the current leader is also Justin Klein with 9.55 pounds. And as always, there is the free to enter kids division sponsored by Roy Bradshaw's Body Shop. Let's go through the winners of the giveaways real quick. The winner of the CCA Cup is Patrick McCabe.
Kapow!
The winner of the Old School Baits was Justin Sellers.
Kapow!
The winner of the Nantaburi Frog was Tyler Smith.
Kapow!
And the winner of the Snakehead Destroyer Swim Baits was Mike Dunsmore.
Kapow!
Any more Morse, Kaz?
Hell yeah. Yep, hell yeah. This is a good show. Again, thank you, Dylan. And look, I'm going to give away some free crabs here, but before I do that, look, folks, if you have not had a chance to get out to the crab sit at the Maryland line in the last couple weeks, you just don't know what you're missing. We have had some of the biggest crabs here from the trout liners here on the Eastern Shore you've ever seen in your life. And when I say big crabs, I mean 7, 8-inch, 9-inch crabs. I'm not kidding. You can see the pictures on our page. So look, now this weekend it's going to be hard crabs, another load of soft crabs. We have some rockfish fillets. I'm really, really thinking about bringing some whole snakeheads up there for you guys. You guys are starting to ask for them. I talked to my netter. He said I can have them this weekend. So if you want some snakeheads, let me know, and we'll get you some up there so you can try them and see how good these things are to eat. That being said, I guess it's time. It's now the Tuesday giveaway. That's what we're going to call it now, Nate. So look, all you have to do with the crab kit, if you want to win free crab, like, share, comment one of our posts, and share it on your page, and leave a comment in the comments so that I can go make sure that you did that. And you do that, then you register for free crabs every weekend. Doesn't matter what post you do, or just do that. So anyway, before we leave you today, we're going to do a little crabby jingle. But before I do that, I want to give away a couple dozen crabs. I'm going to give away a couple dozen crabs here. The first person that's going to get some crabs here is Floyd Scott Zirkle. I'm going to give you 2 dozen mixed Maryland crabs this weekend. Ashley Rebecca, I'm going to give you 2 dozen mixed Maryland crabs this weekend. And, of course, you know what I'm going to leave you with right now? That's that little crabby jingle. Hopefully, don't start coughing while I'm doing it. My crabs, they have 3 first names. It's Tabby, Full, and Fat. My crabs, they have a 4th name. Absolutely Mustard! Absolutely Mustard! Absolutely Mustard Pack! That hurt my throat. So, if you ask me where they're from, they're 100% guaranteed Maryland number 1. At the crab stand, here's a fact, I know for sure you're coming back. Kapow! Kapow! And kapow!